And that's a formula for taking more time than you expect. The agenda today is gutting and stuffing 2656. What committee members have before them is a draft dated 5/28/87. It's the most recent draft. It's grown out of some of the discussions we've had. What it does, it contains two things, as you will, two basic focuses. The first focus is a change in the criteria for deregulation, so that criteria for deregulation is different than the criteria for de-tariffing that existed before. The other part, which is primarily on, well, it starts, the changes start on, actually on page 1 and are encompassed on page 4 and 5, but the amendments starting on page 6 with section 3 represent what we've been calling social contract language. As we reviewed before, we had a proposal that came from PNB to the commissioner called the Universal Service Protection Plan. There were questions about the authority as well as the advisability of doing that plan. The legislative task force could not resolve those, but it determined that before any plan like this is adopted, its recommendation was that there be specific legislative authorization for it. It was partly on the basis that there may be some questions about the authority. Also, I think more than anything, it's because the protection plan went beyond what the legislature had really talked about and contemplated in 2200. So this language, does that as well as maintains the existing, most of the existing procedure. After discussions, we decided to essentially create an alternative. Instead of weaving it, the price flexibility and automatic adjustment clauses that are encompassed in the social contract and weaving that into the existing law, we sort of created a separate bubble out there, as we've called it, to allow that to happen. I think I'd like to start out with perhaps having Jack Sokolowski and anyone else from, or Tom, anyone else from, and Ed maybe want to come up and go through and explain. What I'd like to do is, I think we'll proceed, is to go through, get an explanation of it, have others come up as we have some further discussion about the bill and try and clarify where we are in the language and what people have termed as acceptable. Again, I will, for the record, for members of the committee, for the audience, a lot of people have participated in this discussions. They have done so to make their concerns known. While we have tried to address some of those concerns, it is not, the participation of folks was not in the condition that what we ended up is something that they like or necessarily support. This is not being offered as something of which everyone has signed off on and supports. But we did, everybody who participated raised concerns, which we discussed and tried to address as best we could. So I just want to make it clear that it's not, I don't mean to imply that everybody who participated has said, we think this is a wonderful idea. Jack, why don't you go ahead?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Sokolowski, Assistant Attorney General, one of the counsel for the Public Utility Commission, and I have endeavored to put together this latest proposal dated 5/28/87, which is an effort to, in many respects, present some consensus on this subject. And in respects, it doesn't represent a consensus either. As Representative Ika said, two basic objectives are included in this proposal. One is to redefine the standard for deregulation of telecommunications services. And that objective is addressed on page 2 of the proposal and page 3. And the balance of the proposal is to set the standards for de-tariffing, also known as price listing, telecommunications services. And de-tariffing and price listing telecommunications services is short of deregulation of the services. It means that revenues received from those services can be used to subsidize other rates like local exchange rates. But by the terms of the statute, once the service is deregulated, those revenues are no longer available for subsidies for local exchange service and other services. On page 1 of the bill, we provide that automatic adjustment clauses now, insofar as they're used by telecommunications companies, will only be able to be used in connection with price listing services under the new sections of the bill. That means that if a company is not authorized to price list services, it will not be able to use automatic adjustment clauses in connection with its fixed rate services. The idea was that the ability to use automatic adjustment clauses was going to be one of the inducements to encourage utilities to make offers which have been referred to social contract offers from time to time, that is, make a commitment of some kind in exchange for the ability to price flexibly. Page 2 of the bill, relating to the deregulation standard, is designed to clean up the problem caused by the fact that under House Bill 2200, three different consequences could follow from the showing that a service was subject to competition. It could be deregulated, it could be price listed, and it could be, what was the third one? There were three anyway.
Certifying competitive.
Yeah, that's right. And that same standard was used to certify competitive providers. Because we had the same standard for three different consequences, none of which were related to the other directly, the agency was faced with a real dilemma. On one hand, you would find a service was subject to the competition and therefore certify a competitive provider. By the same token, it was arguable that once you found a service subject to competition for the purpose of certifying a competitive provider, you've also established the standard for deregulating it and price listing it. So we changed the standard here for deregulation by eliminating the reference to subject to competition and substituting, therefore, that the price and service competition had to in fact exist, and that the marginal cost to the petitioner of providing the service was substantially the same as the price of the competition. And I'm not going to go into the details now about what that means, but you can address the questions to the staff members later on if you wish. Page 3 of the bill relates to the standards for re-regulating a service which has been deregulated. Nothing controversial there at the moment, I don't believe. We'll turn to page 6 of the bill, which are the new provisions. These new provisions entitled Section 4 basically set the standard under which services will be allowed to be price listed by a utility. And these services are services that are still subject to regulation. It provides, in essence, that after a notice and hearing, the commission may authorize a utility to price list services. And the rates will no longer be set, if the price listing authority is granted, the rates will no longer be set by the commissioner after a hearing, but the utility can flexibly price its services and change prices from time to time simply by filing price lists. The bill also provides that the commission can place conditions on this price listing. And the conditions can include a determination of circumstances under which the utility, if it earns an excess of revenues, will be required to share the revenues with the consumers of other services. The utility, the commission can place standards on the price listing to guarantee that the utility just isn't the only one that comes out with a benefit here. Subsection 2 of this measure. Oh, I think I should add one more comment about the conditions. And that is that it gives the commission power to set the parameters of the price listing authority to determine earnings allowances in the terms of sharing excess revenues. It does not mention rate of return or any other particular measure of determining an earnings allowance. It could be tied to something else. It's up to the commission. Subsection 2 of this bill, of this section, allows AT&T to price list without further authorization. That means that if the company, like AT&T, I'm using AT&T as the example here, if it does not provide any local exchange service, and it is not affiliated with a company that does provide local exchange service, then it can price list without separate authorization from the commission. Now, the idea was of putting the language in there about affiliations. The idea was to preclude a company which offers both types of service now, local exchange and other than local exchange service, to preclude them from avoiding the effect of the revenue sharing provisions of the statute and other conditions by simply spinning off into a subsidiary their local exchange operations and keeping separate, in a separate company, the non-local exchange operations. Subsection 3 sets forth the conditions which must be found before the commission can authorize a utility to price list. A, B, C, and D are the standards on which the commission must make a finding. Subsection 4 provides that a rate set for a service by a utility shall not be lower than the long-run incremental cost of providing the service. This floor on a rate, a price-listed rate, applies to a company like PNB, which would have to get an authorization to price list from the commission. And it also applies to a company like AT&T, which would not have to get a special authorization. Sub 4 and sub 5 apply to both types of companies, whether or not a special authorization is necessary to price list. Sub 5 provides that the commission on its own motion or a customer of a utility, if a showing can be made that price and service competition do not exist, or if it's for a toll service on a non-competitive route, the commission shall set a maximum rate for the service. Subsection 6 provides, in essence, that the commission shall designate certain services as essential services, and rates shall be fixed for those services in the ordinary manner. That is, as we do it today after hearing. Essential services under this section at the present time would be the same kinds of services that are distinguished in the existing statute as those which cannot be price listed, but the existing statute is with reference only to local exchange services, and this statute is with reference to price listing of non-local exchange services. The subsection also provides that the rates for essential services need not be designed to recover the cost of service of such services, but may be supported by revenues from other regulated telecommunications services of the utility or its affiliates. Now, this language makes clear that the commission may impute a contribution from regulated non-local exchange and non-essential local exchange services in setting the rates for local exchange services. Doesn't require it, but it makes that available to the commission if it wishes. In other words, it doesn't require the commission to set a local exchange rate based on the local exchange services cost of service, full cost of service. And the provision that the section also provides that the commission may authorize automatic increases for fixed rate services as part of price listing authorization under this section. Subsection 7 provides that the commission at any time can require a utility to come in and demonstrate that any or all of price listed rates are just and reasonable and in conformity with the requirements of the section and the authorization of price list which the commission has issued. These same challenges can be made by a plaintiff which is not the commission, but in that case the burden of proving that the violation has occurred is on the plaintiff. If the commission calls the utility in, the burden is on the utility to show that the rates are just unreasonable. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'm finished for the moment.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, do you have any questions?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, 5 and 6.
Page 7.
We have allowed any affected person to appeal on price listed services. Do we also, what is the mechanism for appeal on the commission's rule of what it deems essential? Is there any?
That would be done by rule, and they would have to challenge the rule itself. When the price listed services are being determined in the rulemaking hearing, everybody that's interested in contributing to the deliberations participates then. If the parties aren't satisfied with the designations made by the commission, then they have to challenge the rule itself.
Also, Representative Anderson, sub 5 is for which price and service do not exist in non-competitive situations. A couple of questions I'd like to pursue. Probably directed mostly at Ed in this case. On page 2, sub B of the new language, a lot of questions the original draft, which compared the marginal costs, the two, and now this is somewhat different from the original language. Could you explain a little bit what's different, how it changes it, how it might be more might address some of the concerns that were raised about your ability to determine what the marginal costs of a competitive provider were in the first place.
Mr. Chairman, what this does is substitute the word price for competitive service for what was previously the marginal cost of a competitive service. In most cases, it won't make any difference. This does narrow the test somewhat. In most cases, the test of what a marginal cost is in the competitive world is what the prices are. It does slightly narrow it because there may be some other evidence that somebody might want to bring in. That's all it does. It's perfectly acceptable.
To the PUC.
To the PUC, correct.
Okay. Because I know there were some concerns raised about, one, whether it ought to be done, and two, whether or not it could be done, whether or not you could actually find out what the marginal costs were. And you're saying that the price in the competitive area, the price would generally reflect that.
Mr. Chairman, that's what economic theory tells us.
Thank you. I guess the other question is whether or not in one of our discussions, the commissioner, one of the commissioner's goals was that the commissioner have flexibility that was needed and that we not put a lot of extra work on the commission. And again, it seems to me we've given the commission a lot of flexibility. I don't know how well we've addressed the extra work part of it, but the assumption is that with or without this legislation, you would be having something like the social contractor protection plan being brought forward to you in the first place. So I guess part of the question is, have we done anything that would scare the commission as far as those two points were concerned?
Mr. Chairman, you have reduced the workload to some degree by Section B, because it further defines, and staff does not have to make the argument that A really is what is entailed in B, which is what would happen in a court, and that's the way we would argue it. And it also clarifies and gives us a much more solid ground to make arguments, and it clarifies the decisions that have to be made in a universal service type plan much more than before.
Okay. Tom, do you want to add anything? Thank you. We might be available. There's a few questions. Jack, you might stick around because I'm going to have some folks come up. And
yeah, I try to. There's some typographical errors in this thing that we'll have to catch later on.
Okay. Well, what if we take action on this, which I hope to do, we will then take it down to Legislative Council and have it put in Legislative Council form.
Fine.
We can do that. Can I have Pacific Northwest Bell representatives come up and sure.
Next.
Oren, do you want to come up? Anyone from the telephone companies that would like to come up at this point? Larry, would you address generally whether or not this allows you generally to do what you wanted to do, which is price, which I understand before is to be price flexible and offer an overall plan that would include automatic adjustment clauses?
Okay, if I, Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Larry Huss. I represent Pacific Northwest Bell. With me is Maury Astley on behalf of OITA. If I might address first the deregulation section and do it briefly, then we can move into the other parts. We are still concerned about the dual standards contained in the proposed language. The first one being the language in A, which says, and can reasonably be expected to continue to exist. It is extremely doubtful that we can submit proof that price and service competition will exist, particularly given the rapid entry and exit of people in the telecommunication market and their and specific areas of the telecommunication market. So we would hope that that language would be stricken out of A. In regards to B, while the change permits the meeting the burden of proof more readily, it still continues a standard which we think is inappropriate. In a perfect economic world, price is driven to cost, and those who are not cost efficient are driven out. Under this standard, price is driven to the competitor's cost, and then we are regulated. So if the telephone company can provide the service more efficiently and at a lower cost, we are penalized by continuing to be regulated. The resolution of this is that if we are extraordinarily more competitive and nobody else is in the market, then the qualities that existed at the time of the petition, albeit price and service competition exists, are no longer present, and under subsection C, we might be re-regulated. So I think that the best thing to do is let the marketplace work, and if we are so efficient that there are no other providers, then we will be in a monopoly situation again and re-regulated. So on behalf of PNB, we would recommend that B likewise be eliminated. Turning then to the bubble or the so-called social contract or alternative forms of regulation.
This bubble has gotten bigger.
Yeah, the bubble keeps getting bigger. We have expressed a couple of concerns. First of all, it appears that the structure of this is to design and will accommodate the implementation of an alternative form of regulation such as we have suggested in the past, in which you have maximum pricing flexibility for a body of services and then some sort of price control subject to periodic adjustments as to the remaining or essential services. So in essence, I think the legislation accomplishes that. My concerns in this regard, and because of the newness of the language, obviously I have not had a opportunity to confer with my client in order to say whether the language is something that we can support or live with. But my primary concerns are twofold, or threefold. First of all, again, that what this does is create the situation where if we want to de-tariff or price flexibly toll services, we have to use this vehicle as opposed to just to a showing that it is subject to competition. And we are not opposed to that concept necessarily, so long as the standards for dealing with that single service are not so onerous that it effectively bars us. What we'd like to point out to the committee is currently all competitive providers of toll service in Oregon, which includes every provider with the exception of AT&T and PNB, price their services on a deregulated basis. AT&T prices their services on a flexible basis subject to a cap. Only PNB is left to price its services under the traditional price its toll services under the traditional rate-making process. and that would continue under this unless and until we can meet the standards that are set forth in Section 4 with regard to the toll services. That brings me to the concern over the standards. I sort of obey my right to comment on Section 3, Parts A through C, because they appear to be less onerous, but subsection D, which says that it is, that the action is unlikely to cause any undue harm to any customer class, I think is a standard that we would prefer to see eliminated. Right now, any pricing change under a fixed revenue requirement under the traditional form of regulation has an impact or harm to a customer class. I'll give you an example. If you drop the amount of the carrier common line or a part of the non-traffic sensitive costs that are collected under the carrier common line charge, that is reduced. That revenue has to be picked up elsewhere, and it's generally picked up through local exchange services or basic services. There is
look at that and see if you even need that those words in there, for which price and service competition do not exist. The what I provided to you is a as you've heard us raise time and time again over the last several years of discussion. The whole crux of the issue for us is how you define essential services, and we think what we have here is a very modest but helpful amendment to the bill under subsection 6 after the first line, and that is: essential services shall include services provided to businesses which depend upon those monopoly telephone services as an inseparable and integral part of the telecommunication business services these businesses provide as their primary business service. I spoke with representatives of PNB, and my earlier draft, which is not handwritten, was too broad for them. And I think what I've done here is really screwed it down to those small businesses that their primary business services is really entirely dependent upon the monopoly services they purchase from the local telephone company. And we think this is a very modest protection, and we hope that the committee will add this to the bill and will make the issue much easier for us to contend with.
Let me ask P&B if at this point they've looked at this new language and they have any reaction to it, whether it is acceptable, more acceptable than the other, or at this point not acceptable. I mean, essentially what you were getting at here, Jim, is you want to define essential as some service upon which someone who makes their business off of selling a telephone service.
That's correct. The logic of it is that this plan allows the utility to price flexibility, and for these types of small businesses, this is the largest portion of their costs. And when you have this kind of price flexibility, this can dramatically impact these kinds of businesses, whereas it wouldn't so much a real estate agent or other types of small businesses. That's the key.
Okay, I understand. Larry Cuss.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, albeit the language is much more narrowly drawn than the first draft and appears to, at least at first blush, it seems to include the telephone answering services, radio common carriers, resellers, and inter-exchange communication providers, which are hardly small business. It sets a precedence that I think is just dead wrong, and that is that we now are starting to carve out legislatively niches on a service-by-service basis. There is more than sufficient protection contained in the proposed language in the fact that the commissioner must fix maximum rates for services for which there are no competitive alternatives. Now, that is the type of protection that is appropriate, is that the price can't go up. I'm sure that they're not going to be overly concerned if the price goes down. And so I would suggest that we not start carving out special exceptions on a service-by-service or customer-by-customer basis.
Excuse me, Andy, do you have to go right away?
Yeah, I'm called to check by my building.
If we have 5 minutes, I think we could be done completely, because we got to go to C&B in the House as well. No?
No problem, Representative, because I was just trying to facilitate the interchange that everybody's trying to deal with. I'll let the chair know, though.
Well, if we could have 5 minutes, I think we could take
5 minutes to be there.
Let me make a suggestion. Since there's obviously some major difference of opinion here, I'm not prepared to adopt this right now, Jim. I would suggest that, let me run a suggestion by you on this language. It seems that part of the concern is that there are some things that, while they may be non-essential to some people, argument can be made that they are essential to others. Would it be possible to add language that at least covers that and makes it clear that in defining essential, it does not have to be essential to everybody? The reason I suggest something along those lines is because I recall when we were doing the USPP, the previous commissioner said that there were some services that he felt would be defined as essential on the basis of case brought to him and the relationship of that service to particular customers, and
Matt, comment on that. I think what the staff was testifying to was that not that the services were still essential on the basis of a customer-specific need, but rather that they were non-essential, but still public policy demanded that they continue to be price listed. And since this again is a permissive statute, I think, rate be fixed on it, I think what you would do in an instance like this is, even though you find a service is non-essential, not essential to everybody, that because there are no alternatives, you fix a maximum price level. And that is the safeguard. But we'd be happy to try and sit down with NFIB and see if there's some language that might accommodate what the chair is looking for.
That would be my suggestion. So if there's something you could point to that would not preclude and would leave some leeway, at least at this point. What the chair would like to do, and I'd be asking essentially Representative Anderson's concurrence, is I would like to have a motion to send this bill to the full committee without recommendation. The reason I say without recommendation is, one, there are some issues that still need to be worked out. In the interest of time, I don't think we can work them out right now. If we could send the bill to the full committee without recommendation, we would get the process going. When we discuss it in the full committee tomorrow, I will flag these issues, which between now and then we may try and solve. If we can't, simply make the decision at that time in the full committee. As I have them flagged right now, the issues are on page 2, the language that says, and can reasonably be expected to continue to exist at the end of sub A and sub B in total. Other concerns are the criteria, sub D on page 7. Sub 5, whether or not it should be price and service competition or subject to competition, or another language that Mr. Bruneau suggested. And Have I missed anything? And then Mr. Bruneau's suggested language or other variations on definition of essential. Have I missed anything? We will flag those issues and separate them out, the full committee.
Sir, I think there was a reservation on all section four that Larry wanted to run by some other people to see whether that method was harder than present practice, but I think that's just an overall issue.
No, I understand everybody has to run this by somebody else, so I suppose that's one reason why we're saying without recommendation. But I would like to get it moving along. It may be the full committee will find that it doesn't want to pass it out and could reschedule it for Monday, but I would like to get it to the full committee at this point so we don't get stuck in here. We're only able to have one committee a week.
Chair, move.
We're now dealing
with Bill 2656 as amended by the draft 52887 to the committee without recommendation.
Representative Anderson, let's first adopt the amendments and then we'll move the bill as amended.
All right.
Representative,
I move amendments dated 52887, and they are the typewritten engrossed version to House Bill 2656, and we will strip everything after 1 and 4.
Everything with the related clause.
30 on page 2.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. Representative Anderson moves the amended version of House Bill 2656 to the Full Energy and Environment Committee. The clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye. Subcommittee is adjourned.